Well, hello one and all. Thank you so much for your time. And welcome to this first short segment, the Pharmacy Whiteboard. In this segment, we are hoping to discuss pharmacy topics, normally presented on a whiteboard and proudly displayed throughout the nation in EDs and critical care units. And I'm sure that many of you have seen these before. Now, since it is Pharmacy Appreciation Month, there's of course no better time than this month to shine light on our pharmacy colleagues as they save us from doing silly things in both the ICU and the emergency department. This first one, we'll be focusing on the clinical pharmacist in the ED, and it gives me enormous pleasure to welcome a friend and colleague, Dr. Jonathan Mailman, a pharmacy wizard from UBC. He's got a PharmD. He's had several jobs throughout Canada as a clinical pharmacist, ranging from Kingston to Regina, Saskatchewan, and now currently in Victoria, BC, I believe. He's also the associate editor to the Wiki Journal Club. Jonathan, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Leon. Glad to be here.
So, Jonathan, why should there be a pharmacist in the ED?
I mean, the most important reason is because I like working there and I need a job. The overall picture, when you get a pharmacist involved in patient care on a clinical basis in the hospital, everything gets a little bit better. And I mean, things like, you know, time to first analgesia gets better. Time to appropriate antibiotics gets faster. Depending on where you look for your cost savings, for every dollar spent on clinical pharmacy staff in a hospital, you save somewhere between $4 and $9 for the entire system. So when we look at some of the research that's been done, and some of it can be a bit tricky to do, overall, things get a bit better when we're there to help support the rest of the clinical team to deliver direct patient care.
Well, I'm very glad that you mentioned the evidence. And let's kick it off with sepsis. How do you change sepsis management?
Yeah, I mean, sepsis is funny, right? We know from the evidence out of Winnipeg that every hour delayed of appropriate antimicrobial treatment, that we increase mortality by 7%. Mm. We've all seen that trial. You know, there was a large trial published back in 2014 at a single large trauma center out of the U.S., and they looked at a bundle, right? So that bundle included a pharmacist care versus not having a pharmacist involved. And they saw that the pharmacist got involved in looking at the infectious history and then the risks and benefits of different empiric antibiotics, as well as made and delivered or mixed some of the antibiotics at the bedside in the trauma bay, assisted with fluids and pressors, steroids, and then handed off to that primary pharmacist up on the ward. And when they did that, they noticed that on average, the patient got antibiotics 44 minutes faster, right? So yes, it's within that hour, but still it's significantly faster, having someone else having that second brain running around, or the extra brain running around to look at the patient, figure what's going on, and help prepare things, right? To help with the nurses, help with the physician, the decision-making team.
44 minutes. Do you know if there's any mortality data on that?
So there wasn't mortality data on that one. We do know with getting those antibiotics in faster that we do get a mortality benefit, but they didn't follow those patients out into the larger group.
We'd expect that to be a mortality benefit, but not specifically studied for that. All right. What about trauma?
Oh, trauma. So this one lands with me and lands pretty hard, mostly because traumas used to intimidate me quite a bit. But every time there's a trauma, I'm running towards it as fast as I can. Partially because they showed by having a pharmacist involved, so a study published back in the Journal of Trauma Nursing in 2015, and these patients, they had to be in the trauma bay and they had to receive an IV opiate of some kind. And when they had the pharmacist there, they got that IV opiate 4 minutes faster. So it's 17 minutes versus 21 minutes without a pharmacist around for that first dose. In the same center, 3 years later, so in 2018, they then looked at compliance for antibiotics given in a type 3 open fracture, right? And again, having pharmacists there, they almost doubled the guideline concurrence for the antimicrobial chosen and decreased that time to the first antibiotic significantly. And then, as you made light of earlier, having a pharmacist around, sometimes we stop some silly things from happening. There was a big retrospective review that was done looking at traumas and recesses. And by having a pharmacist involved, they decreased the medication errors by 13-fold.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. That brings us to BPMHs.
Oh my gosh. So BPMH, of course, is short for best possible medication history. I like to think I do a pretty good job at BPMHs myself, but I tell you, there's a group of people that do way better than me, and that is the pharmacy technicians. And it's a pretty standard practice in many centers here in Canada and in other places. And I tell you, I am so thankful when they're there. I am so thankful for the work that they do to talk with the patients and talk with the home pharmacies and talk with their family members or the facilities or their GPs, just trying to get that. It is the best possible medication history. And I'm so thankful that they do that work. The trial I always go back to is there's an author out of the U.S. called Bond, and they have done a whole bunch of work on pharmacy practice research. There was one paper that they published back in pharmacotherapy. They looked at what services decreased mortality. So when there was pharmacy staff involved doing either drug use evaluation or academic detailing for the hospital staff or adverse drug event management, having pharmacy staff involved with ACLS or having pharmacy on medical rounds decreased mortality. But what stands out and what we're talking about right now is having pharmacy staff involved in doing the BPMH lowered mortality. Mm. It dropped it from 49 per 1,000 patient days down to 39. So you knocked off 10 per 1,000 patient days just by having a pharmacy staff involved in doing that BPMH. I mean, it makes sense, right? You're having someone who's highly focused on doing that one thing and doing it well, notating it well, communicating it well, instead of asking someone who's doing 35 other things to do it as fast as they can while they're trying to do everything else that they're doing.
I guess it follows then, yeah. How about stroke? Any evidence for stroke?
Yeah, stroke. There's some of the best evidence we have for pharmacy practices in stroke. Now, I focused on the board, as you said, with the stuff that happens down in Emerge, but there's some great work up on the ward with them as well. And we know having a pharmacist involved in at least two trials will decrease that time to thrombolysis by almost 20 minutes. We also saw by having a pharmacist involved, there was a lower stroke disability scores at 24 hours. And that might be associated with, again, faster assessment, faster time to drug.
All right. And then overall, I guess what the administrators really are interested in, cost savings.
Oh my gosh, cost savings. So a couple different trials that I pull from. One looked at just having the presence of an Emerge pharmacist in the U.S. can save over $300,000 of cost avoidance annually. So those are just drugs that we don't need to use, things that get pulled inappropriately, things that get prescribed don't need to be there, things that we can then avoid us doing the work on and having to redo something else. Right? Here in Canada, there was a trial that was done a couple of years ago that looked at saving cost savings slash cost avoidance by having a pharmacist involved in Emerge, saved $32,000 a week, which sounds like a big number until you remember like a day in the ICU is $18,000 a day, depending on which analysis you look at. It's like, oh, wait a second. And as I hinted at earlier, I misquoted the number. So again, every dollar spent on an Emerge pharmacy staff will decrease for the overall system somewhere between $1.4 to $10.6 for the whole system.
Well, that truly is amazing. So we have some mortality benefit. We have some cost savings. It is just overall, there's no question that pharmacy adds value and safe care to the emergency department. You know, we were talking offline a few minutes ago here, and you were mentioning that there is some challenges in really studying this well.
Yeah, it's tricky, right? Because, you know, in Canada and in many other countries in the world, pharmacists have been involved in direct patient care up on the hospital wards for like 40 years. I remember some of my old professors talking about way back in the dawn of time when pharmacists weren't allowed to leave the basement. They were in the dispensary. They needed like a hall pass in high school. They needed a permission slip from the physician to go up on the wards to go and see patients. And we've moved past that, right? I am now embedded in my Emerge. I've spent time in ICUs working with the team. And so trying to do some of this research to look to see the impact of the pharmacist, it's tricky because, you know, do you compare when the pharmacist is there, when the pharmacist isn't? But is that normal practice? So is it, you know, the pharmacist isn't there at night most often or on the weekend sometimes. So, but is that normal compared to the rest of the week? So it's hard to, you're not really comparing apples to apples. A lot of the time it ends up being retrospective to look at when the pharmacist around, when the pharmacist isn't, but making sure you have to be careful to do that good comparison. There are some countries where they're starting to bring pharmacists on board. And so what they'll have is they'll have a prospective. Okay, we now put a pharmacist onto this ward. What's the effect that's happened? Let's retrospectively look back to see what happened before. But it's tricky to try and show some of that benefit because the pharmacist is built into the system, right? Most orders written in a hospital is seen by a pharmacist at some point before it gets to the patient, depending on the ward, depending on how quickly that drug therapy needs to be delivered. So trying to remove something that's been baked into the system to then check to see if it's working is a bit tricky.
Well, Jonathan, that brings us to the end of this very short segment. I want to thank you for joining me. I want to thank you for giving me a glimpse at your whiteboard. Of course, I did absolutely nothing other than read off your whiteboard. So thank you so much for all the hard work that you did on this. Thanks for all the hard work you guys do on the units to improve patient care and really keep intensivists like myself from doing silly things. Jonathan, thank you.